Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Yeah, you're in the loop, Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us on this Wednesday. Got a little treat for you. As you know, this is a Houston show.
Big time.
Is
the word,
it?
The word legendary that I was, Houston figures.
The word that I was looking for was show. I could not come up with show. This will go great. Appreciate you hanging out with us. But yeah, man, it's a Houston-centric show. And the OG is on here. You've gone through so much of the history of Houston firsthand. And with that being the case, one of the historical figures in Houston is Hakeem Olajuwon. And so we welcome now on the hotline the author of a new book about Hakeem Olajuwon. It's called Dream, The Life and Legacy of Hakeem Olajuwon. Her name is Mirren Fader, and she joins us now. Mirren, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. You are a fantastic feature writer, not just with a couple of books that you've written, but a lot of the features that you've written in the past. And one of the things I wanted to start out with is just, what is it the essence of a great feature or biography in this way? Because it seems like you do such a good job of capturing it.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I think the best biographies or features are about more than sports, right? Like, we could sit here all day and talk about, you know, Hakeem's most iconic moves and championships, but I think what makes him so beloved in Houston, what makes him such an important figure, is all of the things that have nothing to do with basketball, right? It's his return to religion. It's what makes him a good person in the community. I think the best features, the best books really show the person as much as the athlete. There's got to be that human interest element there.
It was really fun for me. This is John Mirren reading your book because I don't know if you know this, but I lived a lot of that, you know, covering Hakeem and the Cougs and Phi Slamma Jamma back in the 80s. And of course, writing a column when they were he was with the Rockets. And my favorite part, and we're going to get into some of this, was I had heard this urban myth, this legend.
Yeah.
And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
You know, exactly, like for years. Oh, it was cold in New York. He was going to St. John's.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, this is so
now.
Obvious that the guy V. Lewis got his ass here. They brokered a deal with U of H. I mean, it was a cool story, but I'm like, finally, somebody got to the bottom of this.
Yes. And you know what? It just surprised me that nobody really had for decades because it was just a better story. I mean, sports media, we love these crazy stories. Where did somebody come from? Oh my God, it went through this and that. And it's like, you mean to tell me that it was too cold and that really dictated like the whole decision? Like, come on. Yeah. I knew it was too good to be true. My spidey senses were just like, no, you have to investigate this. So, you know, what I think is interesting about that story is, well, yes, Olajuwon's ascension is quite improbable. And yes, he did sort of come into all of this by accident, but he was never supposed to go to St. John's. He was never supposed to go to Providence, Georgia, any of the other places. I called all those coaches. They're like, we never recruited him. Thank you for dispelling this myth. The plan, it seems, was to go to Houston all along.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And we all thought that back then.
And the plan worked out swimmingly. It just worked incredibly.
Like, we love the plan. Yeah, exactly.
We're talking to Mirren Fader here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. And, I mean, you mentioned this myth, and there's so much about Hakeem that I feel like has kind of been flattened in some ways. But Hakeem, just there's so many more emotions and so many more ups and downs within all of this. For you, what was the most fascinating kind of thing that maybe coming in felt a little flatter that you found a lot of depth within?
Absolutely. I love the word that you used there because to me, the word that I kept thinking was his story's been so like Disney-fied. You know, it's like there was never any mention of racism, Islamophobia, and both of those things were very much present throughout his entire career. And so I think those parts were most important to me and also important to just talking about the perception of him, right? Like we always talk about what it's like for American players, but never African players. And I think this book would not be complete if not exploring that and how he was treated, which, you know, at times was very demeaning, very ignorant. And even after he wins his second championship in 95, the New York Times still writes an editorial saying, you know, filled with dog whistles, saying, is he marketable? Is his last name, quote, too hard to pronounce? I mean, as somebody that worked on a book on Giannis, I almost thought I was like, am I reading an article from 2024, sadly?
Well, and I'm glad Reggie brought this up, because the other follow-up from that first question I had about, you know, this myth is he was treated like some figure that lived out in the bush and killed lions with his bare hands. And that's a stereotype. That was not him. I mean, that was not him at all. You know, almost like I said, like Disney-like, like you said, or subhuman. And I use that word deliberately, because there was just this feeling back then. It was the 80s, and I was in college in the 80s, covering his teams, and I remember, like, this just doesn't sit right. This guy, it must be weighing on him, and that's what I'm glad that you dug in on as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the most interesting things that I found in my reporting was Hakeem actually penned his own article in the Daily Cougar, the student newspaper, I think it was 1983. And he himself, it was this rare glimmer of having his first person voice in college. You know, Guy Lewis really limited his talking to the press for whatever reason. But in that editorial, Olajuwon was essentially saying, you guys don't understand where I come from. You know, it offends me. It makes me feel frustrated that you think I come from, quote, the jungle, or that I am, quote, dumb. He comes from a very highly educated family. Education always came first in his family. He was shocked at the ignorance of Americans who knew nothing about Nigeria, let alone Africa. And so that editorial really gave me such an insight into what it was like walking around when people exoticized him. They asked him questions that were ridiculous. And don't get me wrong, there were definitely journalists that respected him and admired him, and I talked to those people as well. But there definitely was this sense of treating him like he was, you know, an object rather than a human being.
So we're talking to Miran Fader, the author of Dream, the Life and Legacy of Hakeem Olajuwon here. And, you know, talking about his upbringing, I really enjoyed that part as obviously a child of Nigerians, you know, that resonated with me. But one of the things I found interesting is that seeing the image that you painted of a very, very meek young Hakeem Olajuwon, it seemed to me like basketball allowed him to find the fullness of himself. Is that how you kind of saw what was his upbringing and early life was like?
Yeah, beautifully said, definitely. I mean, when he first, you know, was just a teenager before he really even got into basketball, he was so ashamed of his height. He was bullied. He was made fun of. He was embarrassed when he got called on in class. He would slouch in the doorways. He just felt like this person that doesn't belong. And he couldn't even skip school to avoid the bullying because they would know, because he was the tallest person in his class. And then he starts playing basketball, and then he comes to America, and people are looking at him in a different light. They're celebrating him for his height. He almost can't believe it. Like, oh, this is a good thing. This makes me good. This makes me valuable. This makes me popular. This makes me liked. And so he learns to embrace it and love it. And I think that if you see him nowadays, obviously a grown man, there is this comfortability and quiet confidence in his skin. He walks so almost like regally. And so it's so fascinating to think of him as a young kid slouching, you know, because it's so different from the proud man he is today. And to your point, basketball absolutely allowed him to really blossom and gain that confidence.
A couple more things that I was glad to read again. It was just so much fun for me because, in that time you saw these and they've kind of been romanticized and forgotten. The first one is when he got to the Rockets and for a good while, he was a hothead. He beat people up.
Oh, buddy.
Like he just flat out could not, and opposing teams. I'm remembering one element of your book where you're talking about, like, the Sonics and some other teams and coaches were talking about, like, oh, yeah, we got under his skin. See, you use the word regal. That's what he's perceived to have always been, but that's not always what he's been on the court.
Exactly. For our listeners under 30, Google it. We promise we're not lying. The fights are on YouTube. He was a hothead. I mean, one of his teammates, Robert Reed, sadly, who recently passed away, was like, I mean, Dream was hell. And I think it goes to the competitiveness of thing. I think it, you know, he rarely was the person that started the fight. But to your point, the people like the Sonics, Michael Cage, they would purposely foul him and go after him because they knew if you got him frustrated, you'd take him out of his game, and then he'd react, and then he'd get ejected from the game. So there's all these anecdotes in the book of punching not just opponents, but like getting in fights with his own teammates, Rudy Tomjanovich would just have to walk him back to the locker room after these episodes and say, Dream, like, we need you to stay in the game. I thought it was really important to tell the truth of these years, because he was not always this man of peace. It took him some time to evolve and to, you know, let people go at him and not feel compelled to go back at them.
Now, Mirren, let me ask this. I want to make sure that I'm correct in my what I'm saying here. How much did you talk to Hakeem for this book inherently? Because I know you interviewed well over 200 people in the course of this.
Yeah, I interviewed 266 people. You know, unfortunately, Hakeem didn't want to be interviewed himself, but he was really helpful with the project. I met him in the home of one of his mentor figures, Henry Ibarrondo, and Hakeem had allowed me to come to their home and speak with him. And so that's kind of how it went. And Hakeem allowed me to go to his mosque, and he connected me with the director of his mosque. And then after that, gave me a number for another close friend. And so, you know, his inner circle was so kind and so helpful. And so I just really appreciated that Olajuwon helped. I think, as we all know, he's just a very private person. Mm-hmm. And that's why there's been nothing done on him. So I was really grateful that he allowed me to speak with those people.
So for someone who has done a lot of feature writing, a lot of biography, what was kind of different in having that level of experience of not talking to your subject directly, but having so much come from kind of secondhand perspective?
You know, I think it's a similar process, because even if I had hours with him, I still would have interviewed 266 people, mm-hmm. which was the grand total. I think that is what makes biographies a true work of journalism. You are getting the most unbiased third person journalist reporting, in that you get the voices of others. And, you know, we as humans are biased towards our own stories. If you only get the one person's voice, you don't get the full story. So, you know, it's fun talking to referees. Like, they had to study their game to review film of him to make sure he wasn't traveling, right? Like, you don't get that from an individual Instagram live post. So I think it, you know, it's hard, but in a way it's just what reporting is. I also think it was really nice to be able to do some things that hadn't been done before in his story, in terms of, like, this is the first time his coaches from Nigeria, as well as teammates from Nigeria, were interviewed. They're in their 60s, 70s, 80s. So, you know, I think the unique challenge of this project actually had to do more with age. A lot of people passed away that I interviewed for this book after I did the interviews. Bill Walton, Jerry West. And so I just really felt this urgency to get these memories down before people forget them or pass.
And, you know, I mentioned there were two things that really I enjoyed and that you brought to light. The second one is this. We used to have a running joke among us writers back in the day covering the Rockets, and we would always say, who? And the reason we would do the reason because we would do it in Akeem's voice, like, who? Because as great as, I know you spoke with Fran Blindbury, and he and I used to always do this, because if you talk to Akeem after a game and you asked him about an opposing player or about a particular set that was run offensively that Rudy ran or whatever, he would look at you like he had two heads. Like, he really wasn't a basketball student of the game. He was just amazing at basketball, which I think actually makes him greater. Like, he didn't break down all the film and all that other stuff. It was a very unique career that he had in that respect to me.
It's interesting you say that, because one of my favorite Kenny Smith anecdotes, who is a really great interview for the book, was that he had asked Hakeem something about, like, where do you like the ball? And he was like, the elbow? Should I give you the elbow? And Hakeem was like, the elbow? Like, what's the elbow? And he's like full, like, 7 years into the league at that point or something. And to your point, it's just the incredible instincts that he has and the intelligence and drive without really knowing these basic things of basketball is astounding. Even when he gets his quadruple double, Carol Dawson, who sadly just passed away, he gave me a great anecdote for the book. You know, Hakeem didn't know what a quadruple double was, and he didn't really know that it was so hard to do, because when he was close, they were on the bench and CD was like, oh yeah, like, a quadruple double is a blah blah blah, and Hakeem was like, really? I can do that. Well, no problem, I get it. And then he thinks he has it, and then CD has to break it to him that the league has taken away one assist and he didn't really get it. And he's like, oh man, I got to go to Dream. He's going to be so heartbroken. And Dream just looks at him. And he's like, CD, that's okay. I'll get one next time.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah. Yeah.
Who does that?
I remember what really started with us was Jack Sikma was like an all-star and in his 10th or 11th year. And I asked him about Jack Sikma, something that he did. And he goes, who? Like he didn't even really, he just knew number 41 or whatever it was.
Right.
I think it made him greater.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a gamer, right? It does not matter. Like Jack McCallum, the legendary sports writer, when they played the Celtics in 86 in that finals, he was like, Hakeem did not care about the lore, the legends, the floor, the creeks, whatever. He was like, you're just another player. I don't care what jersey you've got on.
Mirren, I mean, you're obviously talking to an audience of folks that either just flat out, admire and, love Hakeem Olajuwon, or even went as far as like following him during all this time. What's something that you would want that audience to make sure that they get from this book?
I want people to understand that he is a giver. That is the legacy. It's giving to others. It's a story of community. We give flowers to Hakeem, but also to all the mentors that shaped him, right? We learn about the pioneers that came even before Hakeem. There is this myth that I really dislike when writing about American players, that they're self-made and they were in the gym practicing and they did it all by themselves. Hakeem's story really shows you how far a person can go when they get help from a community. It's a group story, and I think that's why from LeBron to Kobe to Giannis, this current generation seeks him out, because that mentorship is just ongoing and ongoing.
Mirren, we appreciate your time so much. Thank you so much. Mirren Fader, the New York Times bestselling author and writer of Dream, The Life and Legacy of Hakeem Olajuwon. I know that you'll be in town tomorrow, correct? At Rouse's Bookstore?
Yes, I can't wait. I can't wait to see you guys.
Absolutely. Mirren, we appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time. Fantastic book. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It is. Mirren Fader. Man, I enjoyed this thoroughly as a Nigerian man whose mother was here in 1988, like, loved basketball. So, like, I've gotten all the stories from her, but so much more context to this. And, of course, as she mentioned, just, like, getting to know the human a little bit more was fascinating through this book. So I've enjoyed it quite a bit.
It was very enlightening. Those stories that I shared with her and she shared with us from all her interviews, a lot of things have sort of been polished up about, you know, what he was, but it's great to read. I would highly recommend.
Yeah. The real of Hakeem Olajuwon. Yeah. Fascinating read. Appreciate you hanging out with us on In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. All right. We've done our interview thing, but no, we got to create time. We got to make sure we got time for my guy Fig. Figgy's mixtape coming up. Fig, what you got?
Yeah, man. Halloween is near, and I want to know one of the worst things you could get. Trick-or-treating, man.
Okay.
I know we all been there before. Plus, Deshaun Watson technically wasn't charged with a crime, but could him being out on the field playing, I guess, serve as a punishment?
Huh. Okay. We'll go through all that next.
Pass the aux cord and crank up the volume. Figgy Figs in the driver's seat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. It's time for Figgy's Mixtape on Sports Radio 610.
Yes, it is Figgy's Mixtape on Sports Radio 610. It's your man Figgy Fig holding it down on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday to everyone out there. I'm sure everybody out there probably trying to get ready for Halloween. I want to say it's like in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that reminds me. I need to go ahead and figure out what I'm going to be for this party for the boss lady.
Have y'all thought of, are y'all dressing up? What y'all got planned? Because I think mine's coming today.
We kind of get a pass because the party is during our show.
Yeah, but I was thinking.
But you can kind of wear something.
We should do something for the YouTubers.
Yeah.
I dressed up last year.
You know what? I will.
I would like to outsource my work.
Ever since you said that, that's a good idea.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to outsource my work. 713-572-4610. Give me some suggestions on what you would like to see me dressed up as for Halloween.
I used to dress up every year when the kids were little. I used to always do it for the kids. And I'd go trick-or-treating with them in my costume.
Yeah.
I'll do something.
Yeah, I did it last year just for the YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody liked it. Mm-hmm. I came as Shaft. So I had the little, fro, the black. Yeah. Damn right. But yeah, so I think my costume is coming today. I ordered it today.
But you're not telling us.
I can tell y'all.
Well, it's
like,
up to
ain't
you.
That big of a deal. Yeah. Yeah, so
Make it a surprise. Make it a surprise.
All right, all right. So what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna try to find somebody to fill in for me for a segment here,
mm-hmm.
while I go,
yeah,
crash the party.
All right.
So so the theme of the party is karaoke.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
So we gonna do like some type of like a lip sync karaoke.
So musical is probably the way to go. Okay, mm-hmm. interesting. And yeah. Adam on the YouTube said, Figgy dresses Lopez, Lopez dresses Reggie, Reggie dresses Figgy.
That's my
You're going to have Figgy out here in a fishing shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, man. So, I guess I'm kind of excited for Halloween. Mm-hmm. But speaking of Halloween, did you know in a recent survey that 28% of Americans do not know any of their neighbors' names?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
that actually seems low.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So somebody, I guess, brung up a good point that the best way to kind of get to know your neighbors around is to pass out candy to the kids.
Absolutely.
So that, I guess that'd be a good way to kind of create a bond with the neighbors and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of that, what kind of candy? So some of the most popular candy that I guess kids like, mm-hmm. are Kit Kats, Nerds, Twizzlers, Jolly Ranchers, Starburst, Skittles, Snickers, and Whoppers.
Yeah. Yeah. The Whoppers, I do wonder how many people actually like that. I'm very fond of them.
I like them. I mean, they're not like top five or anything, yeah. but I'll eat them.
It's saying like that's a very Halloween candy because I don't mm-hmm. know nobody that's going out their way, going
and
to
movies.
The store and getting Whoppers. Yeah, yeah, and movies. Yeah.
And movies.
Unless you like have some level of affiliation with the British because they got the Maltesers, which are the better versions of the Whoppers.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Almond Joy, big fan.
Okay.
Gross. Yeah.
So what's some of the worst things you could possibly get on Halloween? I had a couple things. Mm-hmm. I got the apple one time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really understand that, and we instantly threw that out.
Yeah.
Toothbrushes, I feel like that's kind of corny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
What's some bad things you got on Halloween?
Well, this is a great answer that comes in on the text line. In fact, they gave us the top three. Raisins. You mentioned toothbrush, candy corn. Where do we stand? Let's go around the room. Candy corn, yes or no? Figgy?
No.
Lopez?
No by itself, but mixed with dry roasted peanuts, tastes like a payday
what is
bar
right now.
And
what does this mean?
It's so good.
What?
I'll bring you some tomorrow.
No, I'm not going to eat
we
it.
We do it every day, every year. You get a bottle of dry roasted peanuts and then a bag of candy corn. You mix them together in a bowl. And then you get scoops of that or whatever. Tastes like a payday. And paydays are delicious.
Yeah, I'm good on candy corn. Man. I do
pencils.
Not.
Pencils. I got pencils one year.
Oh. Yeah, I got
God
that.
God almighty.
Oh, man.
Circus peanuts come up. Yeah. I have seen, although I have not received, a ruler. Which I'm just like, you got to fight them. You got to fight them at that point.
At that point, why are you passing out anything?
Exactly.
Like, just don't participate.
Mm-hmm. You're overthinking it.
The one thing I did, I forgot about this. I got a Bible. It was
yeah.
like one of those small little Bibles.
Yeah. Someone just texted, was it a New Testament? You got the little New Testament?
Yeah. Yes.
I am very familiar with those. Somebody said, I love Jesus, but bro, don't give me a Bible.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just like, all right, man. Like, y'all know how to suck the fun out of everything.
Exactly.
Just don't participate.
Yeah.
I can't. My folks were religious, so I ain't get a lot. I had a lot of the Hallelujah nights,
mm-hmm.
right? A lot of those lock-ins type situations, which was nice, though, because they get you the candy.
They do.
Yeah, which was solid. So I don't think I had very many of those. What the hell is this type moments for mm-hmm. myself? A good amount. Popcorn ball comes up. Yeah, popcorn.
Popcorn ball.
Don't
yeah.
Well, you can't do that anymore because everybody'll throw it away.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's looking for prepackaged stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Funny thing is, like, my favorite thing, and I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but the check the candy because they trying to poison the kids at the
razor
candy.
Blades.
The not
razor
just poison.
Razor blades.
The one that I don't get is like they're gonna put drugs in. I'm like, do you know how expensive drugs are? You think people are just coming out well, of their pockets in this economy? And giving your children free drugs?
They putting cocaine in them.
They in my day, they
it'd
said,
be some grown
watch
ass.
Out for those apples, cut it open.
There's a razor blade in there.
How the hell do you put a razor blade in an apple?
That's a great, you see.
How do you put a razor blade inside of an apple?
Hey, you know how many crackheads would be going trick-or-treating? Drugs and the candy.
Black licorice comes in.
I'm dressed up as a homeless person.
That's great.
Look for the candy that was open.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. I always thought that was hilarious. Mm-hmm. But keeping on with the thing with Halloween, movies that are considered not scary, like a horror movie, that's scary as hell to y'all. The first one that popped up in my mind was the movie Juice.
Okay.
Tupac, I didn't see Juice.
Tupac was a scary dude in that movie. Mm-hmm. That, to me, that's not considered a horror movie, but that's a horror movie to me.
You've got the one on your list. I just looked at it.
Yeah, a couple.
That's my number one.
Is it Willy Wonka?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, so a lot of people feel like that boat tunnel scene is very disturbing scene.
Yeah, people don't like that.
So I'm going to go through the list. Get Out, to me, that's that's considered a thriller.
Yeah.
To me, that was a scary. When I first saw it, I ain't realized that, but that's a scary movie to me.
It was pretty tough. That's right about on my borderline. I'm not a horror guy, so that was right on the borderline. Thrillers, I'll do.
Yeah, Black Swan.
That's it. That's a scary movie. Black Swan is a scary movie. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, a couple of now some of these I've never seen, but No Country for Old Men.
That's that one, just brutal.
That one came in immediately. 832. No Country for Old Men.
Mm-hmm. Donnie Darko.
Have not watched, but I've heard about it.
Yep. It's a movie called Her.
I think I saw Her. What's
is I'd Her? Is that it. The Spike Jones?
I'm trying to remember. It sounds like
is that right? Oh my god!
Sounds like I saw it, but.
Yeah, a couple more. Shutter's Island.
Yes, Shutter Island. Yeah, I think that falls in the like thriller category for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The Road, which came out in 2009.
Sounds familiar.
Another one, We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Nah, that's out of my wheelhouse. I'm going to be completely honest.
Yeah. One more. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can see how someone could be like, yeah, that was disturbing to the point of being scary. I got you. 713 mentioned Clockwork Orange. Yeah.
Oh, that is.
Yeah.
That's an old school one. Yeah. Her is the one with Joaquin Phoenix.
Yep. Spike Jones. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited for Halloween, man.
You know what's funny? Like, to stretch your idea further, I remember as a young one, I liked this movie, but I remember vividly being a little afraid of it as a kid. James and the Giant Peach. And I don't know exactly what it was about that. That scared me, but there was something about it that was like, oh, this is, I don't like that.
Hell, The Wizard of Oz. Those flying monkeys and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, no, you know what's a scary, this wasn't a scary movie, but this scene always creeped me out a little bit, but the scene in Home Alone 1 with the old man.
Yeah.
With the
shepherd, or was that one or two?
That was one.
Okay.
With the old man at the church.
Yeah.
Yes. Like that. Yeah.
Did you know, little scary movie trivia here? Toy Story. Nobody thinks that's a scary movie, right? But the very last scene when they changed it. They changed the last scene because so many kids were having night terrors and stuff.
That their toys were coming alive?
No, because the doll, at the very end, the doll says, in the movie you see now, it says, so be good. You know?
Yeah.
The original movie in the theater said, because I'll be watching you. And kids were freaking the bleep out.
I can see that. Like, I can see I'll that. Be.
Some he's watching me, hey, mommy.
Some of the toys did. Some of the toys did look scary, though.
I guess he told the bad kid, whatever his name
What's his name?
Sid.
Yeah.
Now, if you watch it, it says, so be good. In the original in theater, it said, because I'll be watching.
That was definitely a creepy part of that movie.
Yeah.
Sid was messing them toys up, boy.
Yeah.
So I'm a little excited for Halloween. Mm-hmm. And by the way, on Halloween, the Houston Texans will be in New York.
That's right.
Gotham City.
That's right. And I will be at a watch party.
How about that? Well.
So, that's good. I think I'm going to go out to a watch party.
Let's do it, man. For sure. So, yeah, you find folks to be able to come out and hang out with me, if you so choose. Somebody said when it comes to potential Halloween costumes, be H.E. Buddy. Hey, man, if H.E.B. lines it up, I'll wear an H.E. Buddy costume.
Okay. You should.
I'll do it.
So, Deshaun Watson, technically, he wasn't charged with, like, a crime in that whole situation that happened.
But he was wilding, though.
Yeah, he was definitely wild. But I ran across some, I guess, Big Cat from Barstool.
Yeah.
He was talking about Deshaun Watson and him pretty much playing every Sunday on the field. Is it a punishment? Is like he's playing so bad that maybe the Cleveland Browns are trotting him out as a punishment.
Yeah.
And I don't know. This is a different way to think about this. I want to play this for y'all and see how y'all feel about this.
Maybe we're thinking about the Deshaun Watson thing the wrong way, because everyone obviously says he should be benched. He should be benched. He's bad. What if this is just the Browns actually doing justice in a public shaming way? They're like, he's so bad, and we know he's so bad, he can't play quarterback. We're just going to make him continue to play quarterback and publicly shame him, because that's the only justice he'll ever have.
And smoke the whole pack of cigarettes.
Yeah.
Go out back and smoke a whole carton of Browns for me.
He's never going to, like, he's paying people off in his lawsuits. All that's going on. What's the only way that the league can punish him? Make him continue to play quarterback.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. I
was just trying to find a new angle for, he's just so bad.
So to the gentleman in that clip that says smoke a whole carton of Browns, that kind of, so I had a situation like that happen when I was a kid.
Oh.
My older sister, shout out to my older sister, Tasha. She got caught smoking at school or some cigarettes at school.
What, cigarettes?
Yeah, I was like 5 years old at the time.
Yeah.
But I remember my mom saying, you know what? I'm going to get a whole carton of cigarettes.
Oh, a carton?
Oh, my God.
And you going to sit there and smoke them all.
I know she was so sick.
I remember as a kid cracking up, seeing her at the kitchen table. She was crying.
Smoking.
Yeah, so she had to smoke a whole pack. Look, like, to this clip, I'm actually fine with this, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the easy way out is just benching him, because he's getting paid no matter what.
Yeah.
No, go out there and be ass. Be a whole pack of ass out there, man. Like, I was never against the whole fire the coach and, you know, he's so bad, you got to let him go. No, man, you keep coming to work and keep doing this.
You'll be doing him a favor if you let him go.
Yeah.
More Instagram videos with his girlfriend over in, you know, wherever.
Yeah, because I honestly think Deshaun Watson is playing so bad. I think he's actually doing this on purpose to get benched so he don't play.
Well, the thing, I hear the idea, but the problem is now we're talking about collective punishment. And
exactly.
In the Geneva Convention, that's a war crime, right? Like, the thing that we always say about football is you can't really get out there and half-ass it, right? Mm-hmm. And in some ways, he's playing so bad it looked like he half-assing it. But, like, because people get hurt that way. And there are people that are out here actively playing what I like to call the car crash sport. And that dude is giving them no chance of, like, having any level of benefit on the other side. So, I mean, you see Amari Cooper get out there and he's excited to be out of there because there's dude. And that's wide receiver talk, less of the dudes in the trenches and all these other guys that are out here, you know, putting their bodies and trading on their bodies only to have a dude out here that in this theory is being thrown out there as punishment. Nah, we are being punished too, and we don't deserve it.
Nah, there's 52 other guys, as people like to say, you know, and that's what makes it petty. But I use the word petty. I could see the Browns being petty with it.
Yeah.
Well, is Kevin Stefanski being petty? Because this is messing up his legacy. Yeah, unless he got some level of assurances that it's not going to affect him, which I don't know that they would do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought that was a kind of a, it I'm like, funny. All right, just keep trotting his ass out there then.
Yeah, the problem is,
like, you ain't getting out of this easy.
Right. The problem is he has. Like, there's, I don't know what more you can do to actually, like, make him feel it. It's kind of what we were talking about with, like, these team owners, not to the same degree, obviously, but you can't hurt them. Like, you can't hurt, I guess, to that end, it's like embarrass them, but in this instance, you're embarrassing other folks.
Yeah.
All right, Biggie's Mixtape, 1:20 p.m. every weekday right here. In the Loop on Sports Radio 610. All right, coming up next, we will get ready to hand off to our guys, Clint and Ron, The Drive here on Sports Radio 610. But one more time, let's go ahead and salute Cam Akers for his for his diligent work here with the Texans before he has been sent off to the Vikings. We'll do that next.
Thank you, Figgy.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Y'all some fools.
Man.
Need to check on John Lopez, man. Yeah.
In the Loop, John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and myself, Reginald Atitula. Getting ready to hand off to the... Getting ready to hand off to The Drive with Clint and Ron. And this is a John Lopez doing, I'm certain of it. Shout out to Sarah McLachlan coming in because we have to, I guess, mourn, even though he's not dead by any means.
Yeah.
Cam Akers.
The Vikings adopted him.
for the second time.
Yeah.
Again. That's crazy. I know what you're doing there by using the word adopt. I don't like it. Cam Akers.
A moment, if you will, for Cam Akers.
John's pet running back, his favorite.
For at least 8 weeks.
8 weeks. Has been traded to the Vikings for the second year in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And he will continue playing football for them. I know that they've had some injury issues with... their running back situation.
Aaron Jones,
and they're giving a little bit of a depth there. Chandler is the other one.
Ty Chandler.
Yeah. So he'll provide depth there. But yeah.
I can only think about sad dogs.
I know.
I hear this song.
I did not realize that this would affect me the way that it is. But yeah. A moment of appreciation for Cam Akers, who really, I mean, he was your RB1 in a couple of games when Joe Mixon. And Damian Pierce were out. I know that there were some people that were really upset about this. How did this hit you?
Well, obviously, I thought he should have been RB2. The Texans feel very strongly and got a lot of evidence, this past weekend, about Damian Pierce. The thing with Cam Akers, he really did what they asked him to do because they needed him.
Yeah.
At a couple of points.
They sure did.
They needed him.
Found money in some ways because you just invited him to work out, ended up being very productive for you. The trade really didn't, kind of a pick swap where you move up from your conditional seventh to their conditional sixth.
Yeah.
And the roster spot, it becomes free for you. So
the Texans are in a good spot. With their running back position, and that's not just me saying it. I think this move says that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, in hell, we could let Nick Caserio say it. This is Nick Caserio. He was on with Payne and Pendergast this morning. Mm-hmm. This is Cut 2 Fig of the Caserios. And, you know, they had him for a good 45 minutes. He had a blast on there. Yeah. Go ahead and hit that Payne and Pendergast podcast page if you want to hear it. It was a delight to listen to. But this is him talking about, like, the confidence that they have in Damian Pierce.
DP probably had one of the best off seasons of any player in the program. I mean, he worked his ass off. He was in good condition. He was healthy. He was making progress. And he helped our team. And when DP's gotten opportunities, he's taken advantage of them. And, you know, Sunday was a good illustration of that. So, you know, missed it 3 games or 3 weeks, whatever it was. But, you know, for him to come back, I'd say his attitude, he's never wavered. He's always upbeat. He always has a positive attitude. He's a good football player. I think sometimes everybody kind of gets caught up and kind of can accentuate maybe some of the negative things that go on, or maybe it doesn't meet the standard or expectation. Mm-hmm. I'd say DP is, you know, everything that this program is about. So anytime you see a player work that hard, have some success, I mean, that play was a team play. It was well blocked in the perimeter. Dalton, Titus came around, DP kind of squirted through, and he showed good balance after contact, and then he was able to get in the end zone. So, I mean, it's a credit to DP, it's a credit to DB and the offensive staff. So DP's a good football player. I've talked about this in the spring. We've talked about this. We feel he's going to help our football team in some capacity, and because he's shown the ability to do that. So, you know, happy for DP for the work that he's put in, but also understand that, okay, that was last week. Honestly, it doesn't have any bearing about what happens this week against Green Bay. Because this is a week-to-week league, so. But glad Damian's on the team. He's had a great attitude, and he's made positive contributions to the program on a lot of levels.
Danny Barrett, running backs coach.
Yeah, and they're playing GB this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that is true.
Yeah, they are. They're playing GB. Look, I feel like they're in a I shouldn't say great. They're in a very good spot at the running back position. They're telling us that that's their opinion by letting Cam Akers go, having the confidence in Damian Pierce. But I also think in a funny way, Dari Ogunbowale had as much to do with Cam Akers being expendable as anything, because you did not you can say all you want about great offseason, hardest worker, did more than anybody. As Nick, you just heard Nick Sarah talk about Damian Pierce. I don't think very many people expected Dari to all of a sudden become an all around back. You know, he had a very defined role, special teams, some blocking. Well, now they can use him as the third back if necessary. They can use him out of the backfield, which they have. So I think, in a weird way, Damian Pierce starting to fit in is a big reason why Cam Akers, you know, wound up in Minnesota. But Dari Ogunbowale is too.
Yeah, I think they feel comfortable about his being able to hand the ball to him and get productive production out of him as well. So I'm with you there. Some notes from practice earlier today. Robert Woods still not practicing with his foot injury. So that's interesting when it comes to kind of returning and obviously the depth that you have at wide receiver. Laramie Tunsil, oddly enough, is You might get another veteran Wednesday where he's dealing with his ankle. No, he's out there practicing as you get ready for Green Bay. Not practicing, Kamari Lassiter, as we kind of got some ideas that Aaron Wilson was kind of saying, his sources said that he will miss a few more weeks after this one. And then Jimmy Ward still not practicing. Aziz Alshire and Henry To'oto, including also Foley Fatukasi, not practicing at all either. So, yeah, that's a nice group of guys. And I think the big one for us, is, or at least for me, I don't want to speak for you, linebackers. You, both of your linebackers that you're looking at, in fact, D'Amico yesterday or 2 days ago said that, yeah, we'll see where our linebackers are as the week progresses. First day of practice, and neither of those guys that you have been playing or that have been playing a majority of those snaps have been available today.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was looking as well. Alshire, what a revelation. You know, he's been at the linebacker position, and he, you know, he has a knee injury. And so you never know, you know, just the significance of that. And Henry To'oto, I'll say this again, once you get into concussion protocol, it's very unlikely. It's not totally unlikely, but very unlikely that you play that following week. So linebacker is going to be something to watch, especially against a team that loves, has 5, 6, 7 guys that can carry the ball.
Yeah, today is kind of your first look. D'Anico Autry getting into practicing, which is
fun. He did practice,
which is cool. But then, you know, Thursday is going to be the real day. I think that's where you really are breaking down and getting your full practice in when it comes to getting ready for a game. And this is a big one, man, against Green Bay. Going back to D'Anico, I think it's interesting to talk about it because we've kind of set it up as a one-for-one swap with Mario Edwards going to getting to his suspension and D'Anico Autry returning from his. But D'Anico Autry, I kind of have to be careful for myself. He is a pass rusher that kind of third down his defensive tackle. I do wonder, Kurt Heinisch has been activated this week. I wonder if that will kind of give Settle, Khalil Davis more playing time than maybe I'm giving him credit for I have to this point. On the defensive line, because I don't know that D'Anico Autry is going to be a 3-4 down defensive tackle in the way
I was thinking. I don't know that he's not. I mean, we don't know, you know, to what degree he's been, you know, getting work in and all that. It's going to be something to watch. That's for darn sure. You know how much D'Anico Autry plays and really where, you know, he plays.
He's good enough that you want to have him on the field. I just wonder, and maybe this is a great time to welcome in our guys on the drive, Clint and Ron.
I kind of missed Ron not slowly stroking my back as he walked into the room.
Yeah, that was a nice moment that y'all had yesterday. I almost felt left out.
Wait a minute, you're gonna catch me up on it.
Yeah, he came in and made me and creeped me out by just rubbing his hand real slowly against my back as he walked behind
me. That is a milestone in y'all's relationship. he's not a touchy feely.
And he winked at me.
He's not a touchy feely.
No, he's not. And I hated it, but yet today I was kind of half expecting it. That's kind of weird.
What's wrong? We're about back rubbing.
Yeah, we established a new dynamic. But Clint, where do you fall on D'Anico Autry coming in? Like, obviously, you have one D tackle kind of come back from suspension, another one go to suspension, and it's easy to just go, well, there you go. He'll slot in there, but do you think that you'll see Autry play kind of in that D-tackle role consistently down and down out?
Well, I don't know how we don't. I mean, when we first signed D'Anico Autry, I thought a guy that could slide inside in passing situations and third down situations, it would be really good. It became very obvious that this organization, D'Amico Ryans and company, believed that he can be an interior defensive lineman. Because at the time that they were talking the D'Anico Autry stuff, we didn't know that Mario Edwards was going to be who he is. I mean, we were getting told Foley and Tim Settle were the two guys to really look for, and those were the key signs. And now all of a sudden, Mario Edwards jumps out there.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, for me, I've always had a question of whether he can be a down-in, down-out interior defensive lineman. But given what they think and given what their game plan was at the interior defensive line position, plus the current situation with, there ain't no doubt, the best interior defensive lineman that you have from a production standpoint, from a film and a play standpoint, is Mario Edwards Jr.
Right now,
there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And so now you need that guy that you've told us all is an interior defensive lineman. He's going to be a down-in, down-out interior defensive lineman. Now you need him.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question, Reg, is his ass better be. You know, I mean, right now it's not about, oh, well, where do you want him to play? Right now it is, this team is going to need him desperately inside, brother. So, I mean, to me, it's one of those deals where I hope they're right, which D'Amico's been right a lot more than I have. That's for damn sure. So I mean, he's right.
You know, Mario Edwards is 300 plus pounds and has played inside his entire life. This is, I would say, Autry has been more of an end
that he's bumped in occasionally,
and now is the plan different? Is he just going to be a three technique?
Yeah,
like, you know, we'll see, because teams are going to run the football.
Yeah,
I would think
this would be a huge week for D'Amico Autry to prove that he, and for D'Amico's sake, to prove that.
Yeah, he can rush the passer, no doubt, from anywhere.
So I'm looking forward to you guys breaking that down. Before I hand off, Ron, I was driving out to Toyota listening to you fine fellas, and I appreciated the take on Derek Stingley. I thought that was an interesting perspective on the idea of treating him like a lockdown, shutdown corner. And maybe not looking at it. That's the best thing I could say about a radio host, my man.
They got to reel that in a little bit.
So I'm looking forward to listening to...
I think we may hit that a little bit in some space. They got it.
I did, for the record, I did not hear it yesterday.
Well, you get to hear it today, don't you?
I did not hear it yesterday, but I mean, we do have a stock up, stock down segment today. And I don't know the whole gist of it, Greg, because I don't know where you're going with it. But I think we may be, me and Rod may be on the same page.
Okay, excellent. That's what we call a tease.
The gist of it was that ain't the real Revis out there, and they should stop treating him like that.
Stock up, stock down, boys.
Do we got a timestamp for that?
About 3:23, 3:25 action.
Assuming we can stay on the clock 3:23. I'm going to spend a minute and a half talking about Lewis Flory, though, instead of a minute.
Well, you can make sure to stick around the whole time through and listen to the drive.
3:26, 3:27.
All right, Clint, Ron, T-Mill, they're taking over now. I got to go, all right? Calm down. You're listening to KLT, KLT, HD2, and Odyssey Sports Station. And ladies and gentlemen, right now, the drive is live.